and welcome to TWA Tech Radio. Today with a techie, I am Stank Dog, and I'm going to have a short episode this week and cover a couple topics that I've been doing some research on lately, and that is NAS devices, or Network Attached Storage. Some of you may have heard that. It's been actually more and more common here lately as the prices of consumer devices have started to fall and make it reasonable for people to have these devices in their home networks. And I am one of those people. I actually have been needing something like this for a long time, and prices finally dropped to the point where I decided to take the plunge. Now, a network-attached storage device, or NAS device as they're commonly called, is actually pretty simple in concept. In the past, when people wanted to have a centralized area on their network where they wanted to store files and data, they would usually set up a file server somewhere, have multiple disks on that server, partition it out, share it, assign disk space and quotas and things like that on that drive to the different users, and let the operating system on that box control who accesses what and how much space and how it's allocated, et cetera, et cetera. Well, with the rise in growth, of course, of Linux and the powers that it has, there have been some new hardware options in many, many different areas, but again, we're going to focus on NAS only today. And embedded Linux has become a very reasonable way for these devices to start becoming standalone devices where they don't actually need a server to run anymore to do the same type of activities. So what a network-attached storage device actually is, in most cases, is embedded Linux, some form of Linux that has all the necessary files on the BIOS, or on the firmware, I guess for lack of a better word, on the firmware, to do all the same thing that an actual server would be doing. But it only concentrates on the file sharing aspect of everything, the drives, controlling the drives, the data, the file system, etc., etc. You don't need all the bloat of installing a full server operating system and running it and having to maintain it and upgrade it and things like that. With these devices, what they are is basically a small enclosure with as many disks as you decide to buy or put in there, or buy already with the disks inside of them, and can be set up in a lot of different ways, and we're going to go into those in a few minutes. And one of the things you should look at when you're shopping for something like this is what kind of network card it has, what kind of network speed it's going to have when you put it in there. If you've got a gigabit switch at home, you might want to make sure that you're going to buy, it's going to cost you a little more, but you might want to buy a high-speed connection so that you can get full benefits of dragging your files across your high network. Don't make the bottleneck on the NAS device itself. There, on the other hand, if you don't have gigabit at home, you might be able to save some money by only going with the 10100 version of the same thing. So just keep it in mind when you're shopping, and buy whatever's appropriate for you. Secondly, obviously, would be the file size that you need. One thing that's been a problem for me over the years is I've tried a lot of different ways of trying to store my data, keep it safe, and not all on one computer. When I've got on multiple computers, I've tried file servers. They work in the short run, but they eventually get corrupted because the operating systems are so bloated, and when you move and try to alter and change your network a lot, you can end up losing things and have overheating problems with the hardware. So personally, I've had bad luck with that, so I've been waiting for a solution like this inside of my home office, and it's been working good so far. But you want to decide how many drives or how much storage space you're going to need. So I have been using several external USB enclosures, and the problem with using those is that they're not attached to the network, obviously. Most of these are USB enclosures, FireWire enclosures, and you have to physically move these from one computer to another in your network. And they're great for backing things up if you want to just have a backup of everything, especially an automated backup to an external drive for emergencies. They'll serve the purpose for that. Until you start getting 4, 5, 6 computers in your lab like I do, then it kind of becomes a headache and a hassle to monitor and maintain every one of them. And the other thing is, depends on what you want to use it for. If it's just for backups, you may be okay. But what if you're like me and you want to have your MP3 files with the way DRM is these days? They're not real friendly about having your music collection on multiple computers, multiple places in your network, multiple devices. So I like to try to centralize them all into one drive. But if I want to go listen to some on a different computer or move them over to another computer, I have to unplug that USB device and the power adapter that goes with it, move it over to the other side of the room, plug it back in, find it, map it to a drive letter, etc., etc., etc. So the limitation on those is obvious. Also, you really want to buy, if you're going to get those cheap USB external cases, make sure you get something with fans in it that's going to keep it cool. I've had a lot of drives overheat inside of those little enclosures if they don't have proper ventilation. So, for all of those reasons, I decided to move away from that direction and go with this NAS device. And I had probably 2 to 3 terabytes of storage scattered around multiple computers in this office and external drives, etc., etc., that I wanted to centralize. So I went with a 2-terabyte server. Personally, I went with one from Buffalo Technologies called the TerraStation Pro 2. And, of course, you can go shop around and pick what you want. This one cost about $1,000. It's 2 terabytes, which is 4 500-gigabyte hard drives. Now, be careful when you're out shopping for these things because many of these come only as a case. They do not come with the drives. And prices on these things are across the board. So you may see something that costs $1,000, but you've got to read very carefully and make sure that that does, in fact, come with the drives. I have absolutely seen enclosures that cost that much and do not include the actual drives with it. So then you'd have to go out and spend several hundred more dollars on the drives for them. So the other thing to look for is what are the maximum number of drives that it will take. It's quite common to find NAS devices out there that will accept 2 disk drives. Well, I guess theoretically you could get maybe 750 gig drives that are out there now. They're pretty pricey, and I think even higher ones that are real pricey. But you can get 500 gig drives pretty cheap these days. Put 2 of those in there and have a terabyte storage. But then you kind of run into another problem. They defeat some of the other limitations of external USB drives and whatnot, but with only 2 drives, you kind of limit yourself to what you can do with your data in terms of data redundancy and making sure that you don't lose data if things crash. I've had drives crash in the past. I've had file servers lose a drive or two, and if they're not set up properly, you will lose data, and I have. So you want to be careful and make sure that you set up your NAS device the way that is going to best suit you for your needs. If you don't care about data redundancy, you can buy a NAS device or any kind of file server, but NAS device, and have 2 disks in there, 3, 4 disks, whatever it happens to be, and just set it up as a RAID 0 where it stripes across all of the disks in that array, but there's no data redundancy whatsoever. And what that means is it might increase performance because it's spreading the workload amongst 2 drives or however many drives you have, and it'll write some data to this one and write some data to that one theoretically twice as fast. Not quite the case, but think of it that way. So you get increased performance. However, there's no data redundancy. If one of those drives fails, you're SOL. There's nothing you can do. There's no backup. There's no data protection doing it that way. So that's no different really than a drive failing in your PC. You don't have a backup. You've lost everything on that drive. So another option is RAID 1. And RAID 1 is commonly referred to as mirroring. And that's when you have, again, 2 disks. And basically one disk is going to be an exact copy of the other disk. One drive is going to be a complete mirror or duplicate of the other drive. So obviously in that scenario, one drive 500 gigs, the other drive 500 gigs, you're not going to get 1 terabyte of storage out of there because one drive, is complete job is to be a copy of the other one. So you don't really gain any size, you don't gain any performance increase in something like that. If anything, you might take a hit because it has to write everything twice. But you do get 100% data redundancy. So if one of those 2 drives fails, the other drive is a perfect copy of the original, so you've got a mirrored copy, so you can go and replace the first drive, or whichever one failed, with another one, rebuild that one as a mirror, and you're back in business. The next step up from that, and the way that I have this set up, and it's probably the most common, most widely used and set up by default on most of these devices, especially if there's more than two disks, is RAID 5. And RAID 5 is also striping, but it's striping with parity. And what that means, and why that's different from RAID 0, RAID 0 was striped across disks with no data redundancy. There's no parity. It's just spreading out the workload. With RAID 5, you're striping across multiple disks with parity, and therefore you have data redundancy. Usually you need three disks or more. You can do it with two. You might as well just be mirroring if you're going to do it with two, really, but that could be a whole nother debate, I guess. But it's usually three disks or more. In mine at home, I have four. And what this does is it's striping, so it's splitting out the data amongst all the different drives, but at the same time, it's writing data parity bits. So it's making, we're not going to say mirrors, but it's basically building the data that it needs to rebuild if one of the drives fails. So it's not a complete, absolute mirror. You're not going to take, for example, four drives and two of them are used for the parity or mirroring. That would be mirroring, and you're using the entire drive. With parity, what it does is it just writes what it needs to rebuild one of the drives if it were to go down. And every one of the drives has that data on it. So if I'm running a system with four drives, which I am, and one drive fails, it overheats, it just goes bad, it whatever reason it just decides to die, what RAID 5 allows you to do is to take that drive out of the array, put in a new drive to replace it, and when the drives come back up, when the device comes back up, what it will do is it'll take the parity off the other three drives, and it will know what that first drive that failed had on it and rebuild everything on that drive. So that means not only are you getting a little bit of performance from the striping on multiple disks, but you're also going to you're going to have full data redundancy, and you're going to be using minimal disk space for that. It's not a complete mirror where you have to basically cut everything in half. In my example, I have a 2 terabyte server. I actually have about 1.4 terabytes of usable, so about 500-600 gigs of that is used for parity, which, if you think about it, makes sense. 400 or 500 gig drives, if one were to fail, that is about 500 gigs. So any one of them could fail. When this happens, obviously, you want to replace that drive as soon as possible, rebuild it so you've got your system back up again, because if you are down to three drives, the one has failed, you will still be up and running, you will still work, all of the data is still on those three drives, but you no longer have reliable parity because one of the drives is down. So you want to always replace drives as quickly as possible. Now, if you have a lot more than four disks, if you're actually going crazy and you have 8, 10, 12 disks, big arrays in a business environment, for example, you can lose more than one drive because that parity is scattered across so many and it's redundant that you can actually lose several drives before you have to replace them. But for most home users, as soon as a drive goes down, I highly recommend that you replace it ASAP. So keep those things in mind. Your RAID is something that people talk about a lot, but it's definitely worth going over and making sure that you understand what it is when you're going to buy a device like this. And the size, storage size, storage space that you need, the network connectivity of it. And again, most of these use Linux, some sort of embedded Linux in the firmware. However, as of the middle of 2007, I think towards the end of 2007 actually, believe it or not, Microsoft and HP and probably several other vendors shortly thereafter have been working together, and Microsoft is making an embedded OS. Believe it is based on Vista that they're going to release so they can have firmware on a chip as well, which is something that why a lot of gadgets and devices lately have been coming out faster and the growth rate of technology seems to have climbed so much is because embedded Linux really allows people to develop and write their own drivers, their controllers, all that kind of stuff for their hardware embedded onto a chip. Well, Windows has finally caught on and they're trying to inch their way into that, and they're starting with a network attached storage device. So they're going to be basically a headless box. They're going to put it on a chip the same way using Windows file systems, Windows file management, things like that. Probably some sort of interface with it as well. And actually that's something else to bring up. It's minor to me, but it may be important to some people. How you interface with the device. For the most part, you're going to plug this into your switch plug it in wherever you want on your network, wherever it's going to make the most logical sense, and that's, of course, for you to decide. And when you want to set this thing up or add different shares or administer it, it comes with a GUI, a web front end that you will browse to whatever IP address that it has. You'll log in whatever your particular brand or model uses, whether it's admin, or whatever the case may be. Log on to it, and that's where all your control and all your settings are going to be. Now, again, this is minimalist for the most case because it's just doing one job, and that's the file system. So don't expect to find a lot of other fancy things. If you do need something specific, make sure you read in detail all the specifications on the device. For example, mine has FTP server built onto it as well. Many people will like to set their device up, punch a hole in where they can access it remotely and FTP to and from the device directly. I don't need that. It's there if I do. So if you do want something like that, make sure you read up on those as well. So there you go. That's kind of a primer on NAS or network attached storage devices. If you're going to be buying one in the near future, make sure you read up and do some comparison, do some price comparison, but also the features. And the prices are going to continue to fall. You can find some as cheap as $100 to $150 with two small drives in them, and they can climb as high as probably $3,000, $4,000. Obviously higher than that if you're really going to get high-end stuff for an office environment and whatnot. But anyway, hope you enjoyed this, and hope some of the research that I have done in purchasing mine will help you purchase yours as well.
Or maybe you're like me, get in. The purpose of this radio.
Or maybe like we get him an endangered species and then we could kill it. That'd be cool.